Welcome to the Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat with To The Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. During our fireside chat, I sat with Marissa and Hannah from Able. We dove into what it takes to scale your influencer program. They call their influencers partners, which speaks to their approach to their entire program. They bucket their partners as inspirational and aspirational and use those buckets to help determine which partner to use for each campaign. Their program is built on quality over quantity, which has helped them grow their team, their hiring folks, and scale their program. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for a little influencer marketing Q&A with Marissa and Hannah. Welcome back. We've got a few other questions that we didn't get to, but great job with, you know, just kind of sharing your influencer marketing story. You had so many great nuggets to share, and especially for people who are trying to scale their program. You guys were awesome. So thank you so much. All right, let's dive into it. We're going to start from the bottom up to the questions. For new product and collection launches, how early in advance do you share this with your influencers so they can incorporate this into their content calendars?
I would say that we are sharing it with them probably a month in advance. And that's where the cross-functional piece comes into it. In order to be able to do that, it's aligning with your product team as early as you can on an upcoming launch to know what they want to focus on, because that's influenced by sales. And so then you're also coordinating with sales about what they want to push. And so once you have that sweet spot of, I know that this is my list that everybody is aligned on, then you can share it with your influencers. It's best to get it to them at least 1 month in advance if you can, but know that there's going to be extra time on your end to be coordinating with your teams to make sure you have that product list nailed down.
And I would just add to that, like if it's, we call them big bets. If it's a big bet in a new season, like for example, last fall, we launched sweaters for the first time. And that was something that we even did a little bit further out and were a little bit more intentional about because we wanted as many people to have those in their hands as possible for that brand new category launch. So I'd add that piece in too, like if it's a little bit above and beyond just a typical seasonal cadence, to be a little bit more further out.
Yeah, totally. That Q4 is an exception and its own beast, especially in the retail fashion world. So that season in general, I mean, we're getting line sheets and product viewings in front of our key partners right now. Look at which are the big bet seasons too and think, okay, how much buy-in am I going to need to get ahead of time to get everybody on board based on how big of a season it is?
To me, it's amazing how far in advance you do have to plan for this. And I think that there are a lot of people that can run their programs super on the fly, but it's amazing how much faster you can scale if you are a little bit more strategic and do take the time to have that process, that workflow, and that timeline in place.
Marissa always says this, and I've written it down because it's good. And it's just working smarter, not harder on everything. And that feels so true in our partnerships world too. I mean, we can spin our wheels. I know we talked about spinning wheels a lot in the webinar, but it's also just working smarter and not harder. Okay, like how can we be the most efficient about this? Because we know we have all of this inbound and all of this outbound and all of these details. How do we just make this the simplest that we can?
It's minimizing that busy work, because I always feel like there's so much busy work in order to get anything up and off the ground from marketing in general, that identify those busy work things that you have and then, you know, figure out that process and workflow for that. How do you get influencers when you are starting your business and don't have the amount to pay them? Even nano influencers are charging. Do you have some advice for that?
Times are definitely changing in the fact that the influencer job is legitimizing and people are trying to recognize, hey, this is my job, pay me for my time. But I think having an honest conversation and giving a future forward view of saying, hey, here's where we are today. We would love to be so generous with product with you and let you try some product out, give you a really generous commission, see what resonates with your audience. And then there's potential to pay you. And we would love to do that. But we tend to operate with our partners in this way, in this cadence. And we've done also some different tiered ramp up strategies where we might give a higher commission for the first few months where we can't pay as much, but then have it even out over the course of 3 to 4 months come back to our normal commission rate, but then be able to pay them a little bit more. And if they can do what they say they can do, then they'll make that back in commissions. But
yeah,
just be honest about, you're a small brand, you've got a small budget, and you've got to test before you can really fight to pay them that kind of amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And then also, like, the quality versus quantity that we were talking about earlier, it's way easier to have the conversation, at least from my perspective and what we've done, is like having those types of honest conversations on a phone call. Like, if you really want to pursue that relationship, pursuing it and being persistent and being honest and saying, mm-hmm. we can do whatever we can, we really believe in this, but this is just how I'm strapped right now. Acknowledging that it is their job, that you are paying for their time and for their voice, and not forgetting that. It's harder to do an email. And maybe that's just me. I don't like to do that in email as much. And sometimes people just come back with the question of, okay, before we jump on a call, like, what can you pay me? Or these are my rates. It's finding those specific relationships that you're like, I feel really good about this one. I want to get on a call with them, yeah. tell them about our brand and introduce it to them and really focus in on the conversation and not just throwing out pitch emails to 50 people and hoping that it lands, because then you're also stuck with like 30 emails that you have to give that same response to. So I think quality in that space works better than quantity.
I really appreciate that about your guys' program, of what you have described so far, is that there is, you don't hesitate to just kind of lay it all out there for them. Like, hey, this is what our program is. Like, we'd like you to be part of it, but almost like you don't have to be part of it. You know what I mean? And not that that's what you say, but I think there are a lot of people that hesitate saying that. Like, hey, you kind of own it as well too. You're respecting the fact that they're a business by laying it all out there. This is what it is. And they have the option to opt into that or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we had somebody pass recently. They're like, nope, this is my rate and I'm not going to budge. And we're like, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
And that's the right fit. Yeah. And again, I think it's just that persistence and not letting a few no's discourage you, that it might take a little bit of time to find those wins, but they're out there, the people that want to work with you. And we've seen really great success in getting in with people on that ground floor and with someone when they have 30,000 followers, and then grow together over the next few years. And then it's a really sweet relationship as you get to grow the brand and their audience. Mm-hmm.
And looking at the no as a learning.
Yeah.
Okay, why did they say no? And sometimes they are open with feedback of why. And then other times they're just like, maybe another time. And they're way more surface level with it. We've gotten both. And feedback on why they might have said no is helpful. And I'm like, how could I have pitched it differently? Or is there a way that I need to position the brand or talk about the brand in a different way? Or how the pitch email sounds, like optimizing. Again, with the trends and the culture is constantly changing. And so knowing the best way to use that no as a learning to pitch mm-hmm. somebody else, and hopefully the long game, maybe at some other point they'd want to work with us, and knowing how to have that conversation with them again is helpful.
One other thing I'd add that definitely in our early days was something we saw a lot is I would do a lot of gifting with no strings attached. And I think people really mm-hmm. appreciated that. Of like, hey, I'd love to send you some Able and would love to know what you love. And of course, if they love something, they're probably going to talk about it organically in some form or fashion. But that's a really good entry point to people that, you know, you may not know what that relationship could look like. You may not know what the budget might look like there. But I think people appreciate just the no expectation, and you'll get people that don't post, and you know, you get. Weigh out your product gifting budget with that. But I heard some feedback over the years that people really appreciated that. And then you get some really authentic, organic content from that too, when people do love it. Sellers, you know.
But, <yeah. laughs> Even in that same generosity, something that I've seen that I've wondered, like, is this not the norm? And maybe it is, and I'm just behind. But in that no strings attached gifting, also being like, hey, I know you've never tried Able before. If you're between sizes, I'll send you both. Like mm-hmm. that type of generosity.
Yeah.
I want you to have the best experience with the brand from a product perspective. So I'll send you both because I want you to love our Merle jacket. I want you to love these pants. And it's very common for people to be like, okay, like I don't know which size is going to be better for me. Same thing with our affiliate and long-term partners. Sometimes they're just like, I don't know, like I've never tried it.
Yeah.
I've seen the question come up a lot with them of like, is it okay if I try this one? And if not, you can send me another one. And when I've said, I'll just send you both, they're like, that's amazing. So I don't know if that's a common thing or if that's a generous thing that's unique to us, but we always want people to have the best experience with the brand. If that means gifting them duplicates, then that's okay.
How do you guys feel about affiliate programs and how do you approach them?
Yeah, we've definitely got a few different buckets we put under affiliate. So, you know, there's the typical, especially in our space in the fashion industry, there's the reward style, shop style, fashion focused affiliate networks that we definitely have partners that are a part of those. And especially with reward style and the Like to Know It app, you know, we've seen some great things there of the content being more evergreen and we encourage that and want it to live there versus us tracking it on our end and paying them, you know, directly. It's like actually the long tail of it being evergreen on Like to Know It. We want that. Originally, I joked that when we started, influencer wasn't a term. Instagram, I just started. It was all blogs, right? And that was all affiliate. Like it was, you had an affiliate link embedded on your blog and that's how people got to Able. And we still have partners that do that. Again, that's more of that evergreen content. We've seen blogs will come up months, years later is driving traffic and conversions. It's amazing. And then there's the whole other world of affiliate that's like media affiliate and earned media, paid media, gray area, you know, where people are getting paid from the, so there's like a thing called skim links and different things like that that we use a little bit. We honestly haven't focused as much there. It's been a little bit kind of working in the background for us, but I think there's times and places that it's helpful. Yeah. I don't know. What would you add to that?
I agree with all of that. With affiliate, and then also looking at it from the lens of affiliate versus flat fee. I think that's where sometimes people are like, how do you define like affiliate world after all those nuances? And as we're dealing with flat fee and paid rates on top of that, I think that's a differentiating factor of, is this an affiliate partnership where you're not paying me flat fee, or is it flat fee plus affiliate, which we like to be as generous as we can in that realm.
And we interchange that just with commission.
Commission, you know. Yeah. It's like you get an affiliate link where you can earn commission as well as a flat fee for your content, for your sharing. So that's how I've started to differentiate in big buckets of affiliate or not. Affiliate meaning you get commission and not flat fee, but it can also work affiliate plus flat.
Yeah, it's a loaded term.
It is a loaded term. And I did, like, we had an internal meeting about this just a couple of weeks ago where we were really breaking it down. Because I think that if you don't properly define it, it's really hard to answer that question, right? Like you can approach it completely different where you're very focused on bloggers. And I love the fact that you used bloggers as like an example, because that was what it used to be. And now it's evolved into even more than that. Now, what kind of budget do you put aside for influencer marketing? And you obviously don't have to give dollars, but I don't know, is it a percentage range that you have within your overall marketing strategy that you really focus on for influencer marketing?
Yeah, there's three basically line items in our budget. So we've got our product gifting budget, we've got our commissions budget, which is forecasted as a percentage of sales. And so if we are going above and beyond in our influencer conversions, then we might be over our commissions budget. But at the end of the day, it should even out because the sales are also increasing. And then we do have that flat fee kind of paid activation budget. Again, I think we touched on this a little bit earlier, where that data and impact and decision making comes into play, because we've been able to grow that paid line item as Hannah has been able to prove, hey, this is working, or hey, like this reporting is showing paying retainers or whatever it may be is proving to be effective. Let's ask for more budget here. And we're able to increase that. We do weight it on seasonality and based on heavy campaign season or things like that. For example, in our industry, June and July are typically pretty slow. So we don't have as much budget planned for the next 2 months, but then we'll really ramp up in the fall. I don't know if we have like a specific percentage that we've consistently used year over year. We've definitely done some testing and have done it wrong. A couple Christmases ago, up to that point, I had basically no flat fees. Like it was all gifting and commission. And our CEO came to me and was like, hey, we had an investor give us a big kind of chunk of money for holidays. Like you have this huge amount to go get all these flat fees. And I was like, I've been telling partners for years, we don't have that budget. And now we have all this budget. And it was just a weird experience because I all of a sudden was paying like $10,000 or $20,000 for campaigns that it was a good test because it showed us like actually this one-off $20,000 is not the best thing ever. But then so come January, I was like, we don't have that anymore again. Sorry.
Yeah.
So we've learned like pace it out for the year, like really be strategic. And again, I think this would be our quality over quantity again, like that having 2,000 here, 3,000 there, 1,500 there, like having a lot more of those quality, smaller investments versus just those two really big paid campaigns. You know, of course, like a celebrity influencer is going to be like, yeah, pay me $25K to talk about you on my stories once. And it's like, ooh, I don't know if that's the best use of that money. Or you could have 20 people talk about it, you know, that have 2,000 followers. So that actually goes against quality over quantity. Quality and quantity in that.
I was picking up what you were putting down. You can take that big chunk and divide it in so many different ways. You just kind of have to be strategic with what you want to do. And like testing is a huge part of that. Like whatever it is that you've tested, you're going to want to reinvest into like the winning influencers or the winning campaigns or strategies for sure. What is your compensation model for your influencers? Does everyone come in as just a product gifting and then they level up to get to like the affiliate links and then level up with like percentage? What does that structure look like for you guys?
They come in as affiliate link and a certain level of a discount code if it's active during that time, a certain amount of product gifting. And then they can level up based on the type of ROI that's being proven, just the level of content, authenticity with their audience, how people are gravitating towards it. They can level up into some paid where it makes sense with our objectives and the product, and also maybe even a higher discount code. Throughout the process, once we get to retainers, sometimes it's kind of a case-by-case basis, just based on our sales margin. If we're willing to invest a very heavy flat fee each month for a retainer that can show proof and case studies of I can drive this much in sales, we're also trying to weigh that with like, okay, this much of a heavy flat fee can maybe alter the commission, but can change as it goes along and those sales are being earned. So that's when it becomes a case-by-case basis is in the retainer model. But the affiliate link and the ability to earn commission is something that even our CEO has said, and I respect so much, is like, we want them to be compensated out the gate for that they're giving us. And so that competitive commission rate is something that we keep throughout the affiliate process and then even into the paid placement.
Yeah. And our base commission is 18%. And we've really from the beginning.
Good percentage.
Wanted that to be like exactly what Hannah said. It's like, we built that into our margin. You're the one sharing the cost of acquisition for a new customer. You know, if we're going through a digital ad or something else is probably going to be way higher. So if we can pay you 18% and give you a free product, like that's way worth a new customer to us. So
now, how do you know what to ask from an influencer? So for example, unboxing, posts, reels, depending on what your objective is, awareness, followers, or sales. How do you know what to ask for that type of content?
That's a good question. I think it has to do with our previous history of where we've seen conversion and where it's worked, balancing that with what's trending. So like if something's an awareness play, then we want it to get in front of the highest traffic, but also be static so that people can go back to reference it. That's where like an in-feed or a reel might come into something.
Or even a YouTube call.
Starting
to do those a little more.
Over time. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to conversions, if conversions are the thing and we want to spike conversions at a certain time period, we know that Instagram stories is where the highest click-through and also swipe-up rate is. So we know that that's where we're going to target. It comes down to a case-by-case basis, not just with the product and our objective, but also the person. So as we go to individual influencers, we view it as in an individual basis of asking them the question, what works for you? We want to drive these objectives. Where have you seen the highest traffic? Do we need to layer in a blog post that goes live right when your stories go live so that there are two places where they can interact with it and see it? And do we bumper that with some stories later on in the evening so that they see it again or a couple days later? we work individually with each person. And that's where that relationship piece comes in, where we can handle a certain amount of relationships at a time, because we're like, okay, what's going to work with your audience? And then here's the budget I have. How can we find a good win-win based on what we're going to drive and what we can pay you?
Which features of Grin are most helpful for you? Meaning, like, which ones could you not live without? Thanks for sharing.
Definitely the syncing with Shopify to select products for our partners. I know that Grin even allows the partners to select the products themselves, and we actually could utilize that even more. We haven't done the best there, but just the syncing for ourselves and our own team to gift out product that we do pretty heavily and frequently is amazing. I mentioned this previously, but the tagging and the organizing and the sorting, as well as the historical documentation of communication and notes and nuances, is really helpful. We really see it as a CRM of our influencers. It's this all-encompassing historical true north. So I think for me, coming in, those were definitely the two things that I wanted and the two things that have proven to be really helpful. And then since Hannah is the one running really the campaigns on a daily basis, I'll let you get to that.
Yeah, the campaigns piece is huge. Grin's like the third arm of our partnerships team. I feel like it's the two of us, we should have said, and then Grin, which is sitting right. But yeah, the campaign piece allows me to put my plans that are in sheets and in documents and in presentations actually into practice. So being able to place those influencers into individual campaigns, let them see it and track it, and just set the objectives for the campaign in a very clear place is so helpful. Because then there's that like back and forth between them that can happen, less of just something staying in email. It also gives us a more legitimate look as a partnerships team, I think, because being able to give them a landing page and give them content rights document and everything just shows the legitimacy of our program and takes it out of just an email. And then being able at the end of the journey, once the campaign is complete, they've submitted their content, it's posted, being able to look at the success of that campaign and see, you know, what was the standard ROI that was driven and what were our impressions, our engagements, seeing that at a campaign level, and then also being able to see it at a high level helps me so much with my reporting and so much of my data-driven decisions of how do we optimize this and go forward. And then payments, we pay commissions out of there. I think that it's a great resource when we have influencer partners who say, I have this community, they love to ask where I get these things, I want to partner with you, but I've never used reward style, or I don't even really know how that works. And so to be able to say, we can do that for you, we can create a link and we can create a discount code and we can pay you through that, it's just cool to be able to offer that to them.
Yeah, have that option
just to offer that.
The other thing I thought of I'd add to is the real-time tracking of conversions. We actually have the little
Grin bot,
yeah, that we can in Slack and see real-time, you know, who's driving those. And then Shopify actually has a delay in reporting that it takes 24 to 48 hours sometimes for usage conversions to come through. And so I love that I can tell somebody in real-time via Grin, like, oh, you actually drove X number of dollars today. So just that real-time syncing is amazing.
Yeah, the consumer behavior. I'm so happy you mentioned the bot thing. I probably look at it too much. I'm like, okay, I
should have mine on quiet. Otherwise, it'd be too distracting.
But it is so fun. And I truly do mean this. I think it's fun to watch it roll in and to see the behavior of shopping. Like,
yeah,
someone's first share, a huge sales spike as it's coming in. Does it pick up in the evening? Does that mean that people are shopping more in the evening?
Yeah.
As they share organically versus dedicated, how does that look in the Grin bot and how does it roll in? And then when we know we're going to have a good sales day, we can just be like, the Grin bot's doing well. So we're going to end the day at 3 or whatever. So yeah, it's really helpful.
We should have our own little sound for that Slack Grin bot. So it's very distinct.
Yeah.
Exactly. The next one is an advice question. So let's see what you can bring to the table here. It says, hi, we own a branded product that's a bit embarrassing, Natureful, a breast enhancement product. And many influencers might be too shy to promote it. We totally resonate with the Instagram audience, but we're having a hard time getting responses. Any suggestions? Side note, it works for moms who have lost a lot of volume after nursing or anyone that wants more volume in their chest. Any words of wisdom or advice for that?
Well, there are people that we partner with that come to mind. Not like I'm going to go pitch this to them, but like there's a reason why people are popping in my head because there's a story that they can lead with that's not just, hey, talk about my product. I think in general, there's so much pitching that happens like in PR with influencers because they get brand requests all the time. So how do you differentiate yourself and make yourself different and spin it and share your story? So there's a story piece that they can identify people like, okay, like we know this is working great for these types of people. Let's try to find influencers and spend time in that rabbit hole of following people who could really use it. It's a lot of stalking, I'll be honest. It's stalking. There's also the warm lead option that they could do that makes it a little less awkward, but it's pitching it more as an emotional story so that it's less of here's a product. It's also looking at influencers who are comfortable sharing that. That's certain people are popping in my head because I work with some partners that are comfortable sharing those types of details. And their community loves them for that. It's that authentic storytelling piece and putting it all out there, not in a provocative way, but just like, it's like, I'm going to tell you about the bra that works. And here's why I deal with these same issues that you do. Like, relating with them, I think is finding those people that are comfortable in putting it out there and it would be part of their story and feel very natural. We avoid sponsored, forced, in the camera type of content all the time because we don't want our brand to feel that way coming from their accounts.
That's great advice. Storytelling is a great approach for something like this because you're right. They have a product, someone wants it, but nobody really wants to talk about it. So may as well lead with, this is why, this is how I'm feeling. And they gave a really great example of like moms who have lost volume for nursing. Like that's many moms. That's a whole demographic that you can tap into. And, you know, a lot of them are sharing their story online. So it's really fantastic advice.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about negotiating with influencers on compensation?
I would say it can be uncomfortable and not fun and just own that feeling, but to look at it like it's a win-win for both people. I am even phrasing it to partners as just, I want to find a win-win here. We're in the same camp. I want to partner with you. You want to partner with me. Being transparent about this is the budget I have available. What can work? Like, how can we find this win-win? And not taking the first no as an answer. I think there's a level of persistence.
Yeah.
It's like sales, being urgent, but also being graceful that their first response doesn't have to be the last response. And being just about like, I really want to find a win-win here. Based on past history, this is what's worked. Here's out how it could be a win for you at the end. Like, you'll make more or there will be more opportunities. Like giving the bigger picture to it, not just that one instance, is helpful. And just getting into a relational level with it and also just putting numbers out there and graciously saying like, this is our sales margin. This is where partnering with our vice president of sales has been so helpful because she's able to bring in the numbers side of this is what it does to sales margin. So that we're armed with that information when we go into some of these conversations, because it's like numbers aren't very, they can be very emotional, but they don't have to be.
And
having that to arm you with going in, let's find a win-win here for both of us.
That's some great advice. Do you guys have a minimum following to add an influencer into your program?
I think 10K for the swipe up is a pretty good baseline. Like if you don't have the swipe up capability, you're probably less likely, it's less easy for us to see those direct conversions. You know, that's a little bit of a tipping point for us. But at the same time, we do have some nano partners that love the brand and love talking about us. And it really is more on that product gifting relationship. And we're probably not going to spend as much of our time with them. You know, we have to weigh out the value there. But it's very rare that we would say a hard no, a hard pass to somebody who we feel like is a brand alignment and shows passion and has an engaged audience no matter their size. Like you could have 3,000 really engaged, passionate followers And just because you're a good friend, you know, and like people love to listen to their friends talk about things they love, and who knows, you know, what the impact could be on that. And it's a little bit more of a grassroots strategy than like a bigger influencer strategy. But I think there's definitely some value there.
I'm even thinking about it from the like the Grin platform perspective, like when you can accept applications and look at those inbound requests. And I have to catch myself from being like, oh, they don't have a certain number of followers. Like actually looking at their account and their content and seeing if it's a fit is what allows us to approve or deny people, because we do make sure it's a brand fit. We also want to make sure that their account is legitimate enough to support talking about a brand. And there are sometimes that like just working smarter, not harder. Like if the application shows that they have zero followers and you cannot find them on Instagram, so many inbounds that come in, you have to start to allocate your time wisely, but still sifting through it and looking for those gems, that quality over quantity that you're like, okay, like, air this out and give them some product.
We've found amazing content creator partners that have that smaller following count, but really create beautiful content and can team up in that way. I've seen a lot of success there.
Yeah. That's where, like, going off of what you were saying about nano and feeling it out and talking about the effort that you put in or the time, we have found that like it's just a great first test, like with giving nano partners products and an affiliate link and being so thrilled to give them that. And then if their audience really returns, like what we were talking about, we have some incredible nano partners that just have really engaged communities and they love our brand. And we're like, okay, something here. If it's driving this much, if your community is this honed in, like that's long-term potential because it's the community. It's less, it's not as much about, oh, you only have 7,000 followers at that point.
Well, and that's actually a really good segue to the next question, which was, as you pivot an influencer relationship from conversion focused, right? Like if that's not hitting it when it hasn't been working, to whitelisting, can you elaborate on what you mean by whitelisting?
Well, the Grin whitelisting webinar was very helpful. Little plug for there. Thank you for that knowledge.
That's the April webinar.
Yeah. Go listen, everybody. So essentially just putting paid ad money behind content that influencers have created for us. So for instance, like a YouTube video, purchasing the rights to that YouTube video for us to pick clips from it and to funnel it into being a paid ad on Instagram or Facebook, and creating a separate content agreement at that point to purchase the content and to run it as an ad for a certain amount of time. Same way with content creators on Instagram, certain photos or videos like stories. We're like, if this is going to be really beautiful, we would definitely want to elevate it. And sometimes it is going to be knowing on the forefront that we want to elevate it. So right now we're running some influencer ads, partnering with an agency for it. That's been really incredible. And we just knew from the get-go that their story content was going to be created to be an ad for 30 days longer. And so even in instructing the influencers and the creators on how to create the story, we were thinking of it like, this is going to go to brand new audiences. So how they talk about it in their story should make sense with when it's then boosted to people. So that's always important to think about. Is it like chicken or the egg kind of thing?
Yeah.
When is it created and when is it boosted?
And there's something that I know as a consumer, when I'm served an ad, but it's coming from an influencer versus the brand, I'm just a little bit maybe more likely to listen in and watch it and be like, oh, this person loves this, like versus the brand is telling you how awesome they are. And so there's that added bonus feature of why it's valuable.
Yeah, totally. I think TikTok is doing that really well right now. You'll be scrolling through TikTok and you won't know it's an ad for the first 5 seconds before like the little button pops up. And I'm like into it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's an ad. Like that's so good. And that's the type of rabbit hole too, that we go down of, okay, if we're going to engage TikTok and engage influencers on TikTok, how do we do that strategically where we want the content and how they're talking about us to just fit into their video? We don't want it sponsored forced thing. We want it to appear natural and for the brand to creatively be woven into their content, because that's what TikTok is for. And we want to create laughter and emotion and all that that TikTok videos are really good at doing.
A lot of people are very curious, you know, how do you handle and determine payments for influencers? How do you determine who's affiliate, who's a direct pay, who's just product only or post only, or, you know, gifted?
I think it goes back to that kind of process of starting everybody on the same page with the gifted and the baseline commission, and then working towards a goal that either we're setting or they're setting of a flat fee, if that's a part of the conversation. But really, it's about seeing what works and seeing, you know, if this person is converting on a commission-based partnership over and again, then let's have a conversation about getting them into a paid retainer so that we can be an ongoing topic of conversation for them. And a lot of times it'll be us initiating that conversation because we see that it's working. It's more rare that someone's coming to us and just demanding the fee. It's really us kind of getting to that together. And again, because for so long we were just product gifting and commission, I think we've kind of just set that expectation for a lot of people that that's how you work with us, but we are really generous in both of those areas. And then there are times, you know, we've done a little bit of a, hey, we see you. And while you may not be the highest converter ever, you are consistently talking about us. You are always keeping us top of mind in your content and your stories. And you drive okay conversions. But hey, for this campaign, we want to give you $500, you know? And it's just saying, like, we see you, we value you. Like, we're not going to pay you as much as person A over here who is driving all those conversions, but we see you and we want you to know, like, that's valuable to us. So figuring out what that amount is to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, when you run into the influencers that when they have their market rates and they are a name, a well-known name that you know that would be of great value to have their voice and you want to partner with them, you don't have the high budget that you can just throw it at it without knowing that there's risk involved, is being honest about the risk with them and having a conversation of, I respect your market rates and I know that those market rates are there. You have worked hours and hours and hours to get to the point that you're at. This is where we're coming from. Like, I'm going to a larger team to report on the numbers and to report on X, Y, or Z in order for us to claim this as successful. These are the goals that we have. This is the potential. It goes back to that negotiation conversation. I want this to be a win for you and for you to get your market rates. I normally do not put this risk and put this out on the table, not knowing the proof of conversion, but can you show me case studies? Send along case studies. We found that people that are very willing to show case studies, they don't have to show the brands. There are a lot of people are like, can't show you the brand. And we're like, that's totally fine. But if they're showing us case studies, we're like, okay, like, they are confident that they can earn and they for. So looking for that proof there ahead of that risk, and then just sharing with them, this is what I'm up against. This is what we're trying to drive here. How can we work together if we put this market rate on the table? And you'll find through that, it's kind of a litmus test. Like, they know how to convert if they're converters. So they'll give you more bang for your buck a lot of the time. Like, they'll give you the market rate, but then they'll do exorbitantly more because they want it to drive and they want you to be happy so that you can keep getting business and keep doing partnerships.
And even we joke, Hannah's new favorite word is make good. we've done that with some media placements in the past where we may have paid X amount for an article or something that didn't perform what they had promised and done some make good there. But that's something we've started including with partnerships too, that, like, hey, we were really confident that this was going to convert. Is this just a fluke that why it didn't? Like, can you give us any insights? Why didn't we see the conversions that we both thought would happen here? And is there a make good happen? Could you talk about us again next week? So just having this, again, open conversations, talking about expectations and all that.
Now, how do you guys keep track of insights? I think specifically influencer insights. And do you get insights from everyone you work with to create reports? How are you tracking that?
So I bucket it based on our reporting cadences. I do weekly reporting up to the leadership team. I do monthly, quarterly, and annually. Which every level of it is really fascinating to see. And I'm able to bring different insights into whatever cadence I'm talking about. So with weekly, I might not have that, like, overarching bigger insight about how we can pivot and change because it's week by week. But once I look at it from a month standpoint, as I'm on calls with people and I'm talking to my network and I'm talking to my partners, I know those nuggets as I hear them or as I see happening or as I'm looking at the numbers. So then I'm plugging them into, how can we use this next month? Same with quarterly, same with annually. And I would say that it's not like every day you're going to have these huge insights about your program. The daily and the weekly viewpoint honestly just feels like you're going at a million miles a minute.
But yeah.
Then you take a overarching viewpoint in monthly and at the bigger picture, it's easier to just plug in like, oh yeah, I've been doing that every day, 40, 50 hours a week. This is why this didn't work, or this is why. Yeah. And starting to piece together those numbers with what you're hearing people talk about, because they really do correlate to me with what's happening on paper and then what people are saying.
What does your post tracker look like?
We've got a separate Slack channel that is where they are updating daily all the activity that is happening there, the partner and the product that is talked about. Again, so much of it is coming through Gren if they have the OAuth connected, but if they don't for some reason, or if it's a new relationship we're not even aware of, we want to make sure we're tracking that somewhere. And then that will then get copied over into our project management platform and tracked into a calendar so that we have the historical there. So we can go back and say, hey, June of 2019, we saw a huge spike in jackets. What happened again? And say, so-and-so did a huge campaign on it. So having that historical is really helpful on the bigger picture, but then in the day-to-day, it's still a little bit manual. That is a little bit still the pain point, I think, for people who don't OAuth and connect it. It just, I wish there was a way that you didn't have to just watch all the stories and write it all down.
No. That is so true.
And so, there are VIP, like VIP relationships, long-term retainers that we're looking at more closely, like just because.
And they'll send us their data. Yeah.
And they're in their content before they post, like they're sending us content to approve and talking like how they talked about our brand. They want to make sure that they get that in line.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning of our partnerships, they want to make sure they get it right. So we're on like a closer basis of tracking some of those very high converting people, because we want to know on a case by case basis, okay, this is how they shared this time. Even this is how it worked with their other content, because they constantly have stories and content being posted. We're like, okay, how many other brands do they talk about on the same day? What was before? What was after? How does that inform an insight? Like, I even remember in Black Friday, there was something that was shared, like a brand with a bunch of sweaters. And then right after it was like a t-shirt of ours. And I was like, oh gosh, it's very cold outside. And that looks very stark. And so it was like, is that an insight with how our product and how our brand is looking as it's put into their content calendar? And how does that inform how it converts or how it doesn't? And then how do we take that as a learning of in contracts, even being like paying this market rate, we do ask for exclusivity in being the brand that you're talking about that day? Or how much do you post about other brands, other partnerships in one day? Like, what's your percentage so we know that we're getting enough airtime? Because there are some partners that are constantly posting links, and sometimes it can get a little exhaustive, and then sometimes it works for them and we don't really see a difference. And that's where management comes in. And I'm sure that people listening to this podcast have come across management relationships, and we work with a lot of talent managers, and they're being their goalie of like how much brand they can talk about to stay authentic. And so taking that approach too, as you're looking at a manager relationship and negotiating with a manager and not the influencer themselves, and know that they just have their best interests at heart and they want the content to appear the right way. It just might be a more of a formal negotiation when you are talking to a manager.
Excellent. Now, right now I'm also living in the Excel Google Sheets world and trying to manage the influencer program solo. I struggle with figuring out or finding KPIs and performance metrics to show any success. How has Gren helped you with in terms of time saving and getting metrics?
Gren just pools it all into a campaign and into your dashboard. So once you add an influencer and you add their networks with just a simple copy paste, it saves their profile and saves all their information and just pools it into your reporting dashboard. If I was working in that same Google Sheets world, I don't know how I would track all the individual KPIs. That would be really hard. I mean, you can at an individual basis for a paid campaign with a person and do the math. And we do that math every day of like, okay, this one off, how did this perform? How did this do? But within Grin, it allows it to just all be populated there for us to then do high level reporting and campaign reporting.
Yeah, I think the syncing is the biggest thing. Like, I think about a great example is Instagram followers. I might put in my Excel spreadsheet that they have 28,000 followers, but then 6 months from now, that could go up, down, whatever.
Yeah.
Am I back in updating that? What's the cadence of updating it? You know, mm-hmm. Whereas when it's their profiles just synced in Grin, it's updating it. Thank you.
Yeah. need to dig deeper, right?
No need. And then content, we would have columns where we would copy and paste grid post links. And it's like, how many do you put in there? All of them? The best ones? You know, it's like trying to decide like what to track and keep historical links on. And yeah, it's a little messy and crazy pretty fast. So
if your target customers are women in their 50s and 60s, let's say, does it make sense to do influencer marketing on Instagram? If not, what platform? I think this is such an interesting question because there's this generational of like, all right, if you're 50s and 60s, you're not on TikTok, right? And then there's, or you are on Facebook, but you're not on Instagram. What are your thoughts on like that generational?
Yeah, we have a partner right now that's one of our retainer partners, and she is in her mid 40s. She is on Instagram and has a presence there, but you can tell that Facebook is her
jam.
Yeah. Just in seeing, you know, she may get 20 comments on Instagram, but she has 200 on Facebook. And
yeah,
and I have to remember like, oh yeah, go monitor over there too. Like something's happening over there. But it is, I mean, there is a generational preference of platform and, mm-hmm. and that's okay. And I think figuring it out, it's not a one size fits all. Like just because you're in a certain generation doesn't mean you can't be on a certain platform, but there definitely tends to be a preference leaning per age demographic.
And see it in their numbers, right?
Totally. And Facebook, you know, now they have stories like they, it's because mm-hmm. you know, they're the same company now as Instagram. They've definitely adopted some of those features that Instagram used to only have. And then the great thing about Facebook is you can link in the post, which Instagram, obviously you can't do. So there's, you know, some pros and cons to all of it, but yeah, mm-hmm. I wouldn't write it off just because it's not your favorite platform. It could still be successful.
From your experience, what's the best way to test whether a particular influencer would represent your brand well?
Hannah mentioned before, just start following them as in your personal account or if you have mm-hmm. Insta or something, you know, not necessarily from the brand if you don't want to call attention to it. And just watch how they talk about other brands because it's going to be the same, you know, and see, are they funny? Are they, you know, serious? Are they authentic? Are they, you could tell it looks like an ad because it's going to translate the same to your brand. It doesn't have to be the same vertical. It doesn't have to be the same industry, but I think that's the most authentic way to figure out how they talk about things. And then, yeah, you know, we've got personas of who our customer is in variety of demographics. And when we think about what is she doing? What is she watching? What is she liking? Does that partner fit into that demographic? Is she somebody who loves fitness? Then she might really love to follow a fitness influencer or, you know, fill in the blank. But thinking about those kind of correlations with your brand too, that might be a little bit more of a niche kind of a situation.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. This is a great question to end on because I think that this is very much so your guys' philosophy of like just kind of community. You said it's not about followers, but instead community. How do you determine community outside of engagement?
There are context clues that you can pick up on as you are getting to know them, whether that be through starting to follow them and starting to listen to them. Also, when you have a conversation with them, if they are talking about their community, like, well, my followers only shop in this price point, or my followers are mm-hmm. constantly asking me for this kind of thing. That means that they're not just an engagement rate, that they are wanting to meet their people and really value the people that follow them, not just,
yeah.
I'm an influencer. It's like a lot of people can be influencers, but if it's someone who's like, I am here to represent these people and to give them information and to give them the best products, and I want to make sure that this is a fit. I'm like, I would love to work with you because you value that community, you value what you bring to them, and we hope that we pass the test. Because then that's an authentic community that trusts and purchases because they really trust what you bring to them. So I would look for those types of personal nuances and how they talk about their account and their following. Also, if they're giving you ideas, ask them, like, how would this best resonate? Or, okay, here are the goals we have. Now, how would you like to meet your community with this? If they're able to do that dance with you, then they understand their community and how to meet them. Not just, okay, I think I'm going to do a haul and we'll see. And how many slides, like if they're kind of following it by the book and not really getting insights. And if it also correlates with how they're talking on their account, it might be a little more forced and not there. And I will say that checking engagement rate also does help, because buying followers is a real thing. Making sure that you are checking the engagement rate just to check that off your list is also helpful.
And I think watch, you know, how they interact in their stories with their partners, and for Instagram specifically, you'll see somebody repost, DM, screenshot of like, oh yeah, I bought that and I loved it. I'm so glad you told me about it. Like, that's kind of a common thing for people who are in an engaged community, is their community will tell them back, like, thank you for telling me about so-and-so. I love it. So those are those context clues that Hannah was talking about. You kind of just figure out how to look for those little nuggets.
Another great context clue is sometimes influencers will just straight up say, like, you guys sold out of that top yesterday. Like, that's a huge context clue that they are meeting their community with the products that they want and their community buys. That's just those, they will like that sometimes on their account, or just like, hey, I've asked them to restock this, or I talked to this brand. Like, that's their job. They know how to do that dance. They understand how to market product and to do it really strategically for you. So just do a lot of stalking and a lot of rabbit holes. It definitely pays off.
I also love both of those terms, stalking and rabbit hole. We'll coin them as the ABLE influencer program words for sure. I have so much gratitude for you guys being able to stay on so long with me and get through these questions and the fireside chat. Thank you again so much. And I know that anybody listening and who have watched the webinar, I thank you as well too.
Yeah, well, thank you for having us.
Thanks so much. It was great.
I hope that you gained lots of insights. It's always great to hear from marketers in the trenches of influencer marketing and learn from their stories. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. I wouldn't mind 5 stars. If you're interested in watching the entire fireside chat of scaling an influencer program to achieve 7x ROI, please visit our website, grin.co. under the live events section. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. Until next time, keep grinning.